Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Cambridge 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James have had a great run. But one area they cannot win is that whenever they go to play in Salt Lake City, to take on the Jazz at the old Delta Center, the Jazz have won six of the last seven meetings in Utah over the Cavs, including last night. David Locke with the call as Trey Lyles puts them in front to stay.
Mack gives to Lyles. Catch and shoot three. Got it! Trey Lyles, cold-blooded rookie from Kentucky from the right side.
Made it 76-71. They beat the Cavs 94-85. They've beaten Cleveland now six of the last seven times they have played in Utah, in Salt Lake City. That's your play-by-play call of the day. All right, Penn State football, plenty of news. Rich Scarcella was given the first question yesterday at the press conference with head coach James Franklin. Joins us on the line. Rich, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Doing very well. How are you?
Well, I'm great. I'm on my way to Wheeling, West Virginia to cover the Kutztown University men in the Division II Atlantic Regional Finals.
Very nice. Very nice.
Have a nice year.
How about James Franklin at his press conference yesterday? What were your thoughts, your takeaways from that, Rich?
I think the quarterback race would be the first thing. I think that's going to be, it's wide open between Trace McSorley and Tommy Stevens. I think a lot of people coming out of the Taxpayer Bowl figured it was going to be Trace McSorley. Slam Dunk would be the starter when the season began. The more you hear and the more I heard yesterday, I think it's going to be, I think I would rate it a toss up. I think that what I'm hearing, and obviously you're closer to the program than me, Tommy Stevens has made quite an impression. The other thing is the offensive lineup. It sounds like we've been talking about it for about 10 years. but all of us have, obviously the last few years for good reason. But I think James Franklin made it clear that the younger guys like Ryan Bates, Steven Gonzalez, who were redshirted last year, are going to be in the mix. And the one guy that just enrolled in January, who I think is going to be more than in the mix, is Connor McGovern. So those are a couple of things that were takeaways. And then the middle linebacker position, found it fascinating that Naeem Wortman and Jason Benda both want to be the middle linebacker. And obviously that's going to have to play out over the next few months.
Yeah, that'll have to play out. What about the move of Givens and Curtis Cothran to the defensive tackle spots?
It's not a shock that somebody was going to be moved there. Kevin Givens must be quite the physical specimen. It'll be interesting to see him there. I didn't know how they were going to do it. I didn't know if maybe that somebody like a Derek Dowry might be moved back to defense. I didn't know, but I figured somebody was going to have to be moved to increase the depth, improve the depth of defensive tackle, and that was Cothran and Givens.
Back to quarterback for a moment. It's always intriguing when there's a quarterback battle. Everyone knows that. That makes great copy, great talk show discussion, so forth. And this time it's Trace McSorley, Tommy Stevens would be the two leading guys. Does it become even more intriguing to you because it's a fresh set of eyes making the evaluation?
Oh, sure. Oh, definitely. I mean, I think I think, you know, the fact that Christian Hackenberg was the quarterback the last 3 years, and, you know, I think a lot of us figured he was going to be the starter even as a true freshman. This will be interesting. It's a suspenseful thing, and also the fact that Joe Moorhead is going to be doing a lot of the evaluation. Sure. Oh, yeah, I find it very intriguing. I look forward to sitting down with Joe and sitting down with Tommy and Trace and, you know, once spring practice gets underway and find out, you know, how they fit into Joe's offense. You know, we don't know that. We really don't. And, yeah, I find that very intriguing.
As this plays out, as they go along, what are some of the players that maybe Penn State fans haven't seen a lot of yet that intrigue you as a reporter to see if they make some progress?
I'm going to stick with the offensive line.
Okay.
I want to see the younger guys on the offensive line. You know that, and somebody like, you know, from my area, will Michael Mennett be in the mix when he enrolls after he enrolls in January? You know, obviously James wasn't going to mention him because he's not going to be participating in spring practice, but that he's intriguing to me, and the whole way the offensive line shakes out. The other two guys, and James mentioned them, and we've all known about them and heard about them, is Juwan Johnson and Irvin Charles at wide receiver.
Right.
I think my guess and my gut tells me that they're going to have a big impact on the team this season. So, I look forward to seeing them, at the blue-white game, or if not sooner.
They finally have been able to recruit in a way where they've been able to boost the numbers, I think boost the athleticism, also get some specialists in here as well. What kind of improvement do you see in special teams that can make a field position difference that they really haven't had to their advantage maybe for 3 years now?
Well, I mean, I don't think, I mean, James has talked about it. I mean, I think there's, I forget how many games you can count the last two seasons where a really good punter who gets good hang time and a really good kickoff guy. If Penn State had one of those or both of those, I don't know how many games, five games, it could have affected the outcome.
Right.
So, yeah, I think if they find the right guy, you know, what, you know, a kicker or a punter or both, you know, that could be a big difference in some close games.
You mentioned Michael Mennett being from your area and coming in here. I want to stick in your area for a moment. Evidently,
sure.
You have one heck of a high school basketball team down there with a heck of a player as well.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Everyone's talked about Roman and what Roman's done. They've got Plymouth White Marsh tonight. But tell us a little bit about Reading and what makes Reading really, really good.
Well, Reading has, you didn't mention his name, but I know you know it, Monty Walker.
I'm not allowed to mention his name. Okay.
Monty Walker, high school junior, Reading High School, who is one of the top juniors in the country, in the state and in the country. He is 6'5". His father played at Alvernia several years ago. He can do a lot of things. He can play inside. He can play outside. He's not as great a shooter as a Tony Carr at Roman Catholic. He's not as dominant inside as Lamar Stevens from Roman Catholic, but he's sort of that in-between guy. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean this in a good way. He can play inside or outside. I think if he at a big-time program, he's going to be a guard. And he is exceptional. I wasn't planning to, but I drove down Temple to watch Reading play Chester. I had seen Lonnie and Reading play once before in the Berks County Championship game. They weren't really impressed. And against Chester, he had 30 points. And you really, two of the plays that stuck out to me were he set up high at the end of the third quarter, made a three-point shot from about 22, 23 feet. And then later in the game, he made a play going to the basket where he hesitated in midair and let the shot go and got fouled as he was coming down for a 3-point play. He's a very exceptional athlete.
Yeah, Rich.
And,
No, go ahead, Rich. No, keep going.
No, I was just going to say, and Redding has two really good guards to go with Lonnie. Kids by the name of Kyrie Morris and Damon Stern. They're not real big, but they're very quick. They can shoot. Morris is maybe 5'10 and can probably jump. I mean, he had 9 rebounds Saturday against Chester. I think they've got a really tough game tonight at Chambersburg against Alberdice from Pittsburgh, which is 27-28-1. That's going to be a real tough game, and if they survive that tonight in the semifinals, my guess is they're going to be playing Roman Catholic Saturday night in Hershey.
Right, and just so everyone understands, because of NCAA rules, I can't mention players' names unless they've already signed.
Yeah,
that's why I didn't talk about it at all.
Yeah.
But Rich
did. Yeah, but Lonnie is an exceptional player. I know you mentioned schools. Villanova's in on him. Temple, I know Franny. Buffy's been up to see him in practice a couple times. So he's been offered by UCLA, USC. And talking to a lot of the basketball people from my area and, who've coached and played, they think that his best fit would be at a place like Villanova, which is a guard-oriented offense. We'll see. He's got a, I don't know what he's thinking, if he's planning to, commit early, in the fall. I'm not sure. But he's got quite a few offers.
Rich, always a pleasure. Safe travels going down to that basketball game with Kutztown playing.
Hey, Steve, thanks. My pleasure. Anytime.
Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. We'll come back with more in a moment. Greg Pickle still to come. Final half hours. We continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us. Let's discuss the hard story of Martavis Bryant fighting depression, drug issue, now out for a year from the NFL. And while Steeler fans will talk about, well, how do you adjust to it? That is part of it, obviously, but the personal part of it is very, very difficult. Depression is incredibly hard to fight and a very difficult circle to be in. And it's obviously led to other problems that he needs help. And I guess he's going to check himself into rehab coming up on Sunday.
And a lot of people were on social media over the weekend saying, you're so young, you're making that much money. How could you be depressed? So a lot of people were quick to judge when they really shouldn't have been at all.
Well, you know what? You need to put yourself into somebody else's shoes. And the other part is sometimes you don't know. For example, what kind of chemical balance you have. You don't know what the chemical balance is that somebody else has. I'm not going to sit here and act like a doctor, but how often have we heard, for example, in hospitals, whether it's yourself or with relatives, how, quote, we have to get all the medications right. They have to all be in balance. Well, everybody has their own chemical balance. And you wonder if he has a chemical imbalance that then leads to depression. I don't know. I'm so far on the outside looking in, it's ridiculous. I'm just throwing it out there as to consider. As for reaction on Twitter, oh boy, that brings up an entire week's worth of shows. It's one of the more effective ways to get your message out. It is really an incredibly effective way to get your message out. It's immediate. You have to have it. You have to be able to do it today if you're going down that road, Twitter. And you look at the political campaigns.
I maintain and have always maintained that a critical part of the front runner for the Republican nomination is his use of Twitter. He's got between 6 million and 10 million followers where he can just get out whatever message he wants to. Direct from him. That's not a small factor at all in everything that's gone on. It's not a small factor. And I'm not meaning to be political, but I'm using it as an example of you can use it to get your personal message out. More so than Facebook, even more so than any other social media, even Instagram. Because so many people are checking their phones. How many times a day do you check your phone? In fact, I think I caught Sean checking it right now.
Yep. I was actually going to go to Trump's Twitter to see how many followers he has.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good one. How many times a day do you check your phone?
Oh, man. I bet if I would even say 30, that would be a small number.
Okay. I'm about less than 10. Seriously.
Which is the reason why you're less stressed.
I mean, less than 10. I mean, you know, if I've got a text message on there or whatever, or phone call, or... Yeah, okay. Usually, but I mean, between laptop and iPad, I'm connected electronically. Whenever I need to be.
Donald Trump, 6,925,000 followers on Twitter. I wonder how many he had before he announced his run for the White House last June.
I don't know, but I said between 6 million and 10 million.
There you go.
On the lower end of it, but still but it's his ability, again, regardless of what the message on there says, that's not what this is about. That's for Lawrence's show to discuss and not mine. But he has the ability of saying, right, in 140 characters, boom, and he gets a message out. Okay, for example, if you wanted to say, hey, everybody in Asheville, North Carolina, I've got a rally coming up tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Asheville Civic Center, boom, and get people out there. Conversely, social media was very important in getting people out to Chicago on Friday night, which then shut down his rally. You know, so there's been social media has been very effective. And one of the biggest problems we have in our country right now, a huge problem as far as I'm concerned, is that terrorists seem to understand social media quicker than we do. That's how they constantly get messages out. But that's the way it is. It is immediate. It gets right to the people you're trying to reach right away. You know, all those tweets I put out. Kevin and you have wanted me to tweet forever. I know you have.
When I found out I was going to be on with you on almost an everyday basis, I said to myself, I'm not even going there. We'll we'll handle the Steve Jones PSU Twitter from here.
I don't mind. I mean, I don't care, but I don't follow it. Now, I'm not comparing myself to these people. Please don't think that I am. I'm not. But for example, you know, Al Michaels and Bob Costas, for example, they don't have it. What do you need to be burdened by that for? Now, are they young? No, they're even older than I am. But it is interesting. Not everybody has to have it. Now, you have it.
We do?
Mm-hmm. What's the last thing you put on your Twitter account?
Let's see. It's probably been a day or so. Been a while.
What was it? He's checking right now.
I am. let's see, a couple days ago when LSU announced that they would not participate in the postseason. Found a Sports Illustrated story with, I just commented on it, no Ben Simmons, hashtag SEC, hashtag March Madness.
There you go. All right.
That's 2 days ago.
Okay. Twitter's important in recruiting. We see that all the time. Reporters are constantly checking up on players' Twitter accounts to give an indication as to where they might go. And sometimes players are using Twitter to make their announcement.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You always want to be with a dealership that locks in on you. That's Sunbury Motors. Great people. They do a great job. What a great selection of vehicles, too. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. Drake. Trying to trip people on the sideline of the Bulls game. Trying to throw the ball in. What are you doing? LeBron's with the Heat. Drake's a fan. Hey, from Toronto, Drake's a fan. Golden State starts winning, Drake's a fan. Now he's getting involved in Bulls games on the sideline when they throw the ball in. Are you kidding me? The last person you'd ever thought you'd hear me talk about, Drake! Our sports bozo of the day. Did you ever think you'd hear me talk about Drake?
I did not think so. But yeah, I knew he was a big NBA fan since Toronto had the All-Star game last month. He was pretty much anywhere and everywhere that weekend.
Yeah, well, here's one for you. Okay, Drake's a big fan of teams that win.
Yeah.
Okay, front runner.
He'll be at some Golden State games before we know it.
Oh, well, no, he's already gone to a couple Golden State games.
Yeah, that was so last year.
Come on. All right, let's bring in Greg Pickle from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. Greg, welcome. It's great to have you with us. What were some of your takeaways from James Franklin's press conference yesterday?
Yeah, there were a couple things that jumped out to me. Obviously, hearing from him that there's really no timetable for the quarterback decision is not really a total shock. But, you know, the fact that he left it sort of open-ended and said it could come at the end of spring, I thought was interesting. But it's going to surprise me if that's the case. I'm pretty sure we're heading toward the summer, if not week one decision, just based on how things have gone in the past. So I thought that was interesting. You know, when you look at the idea of Jason Kabinda really wanting to stay at middle linebacker, and Naeem Ortman-White also, of course, wanting to be there coming off of his injury, I thought that was good. You know, teammates fighting obviously isn't generally a good thing, and of course James didn't mean literally they were fighting, but I think that both those guys being hungry to sort of be the controller and the leader of the defense is really important, because it's going to be a defense that needs that kind of leadership. So I thought that was one of the bigger things that I sort of took away from that 45 minutes or so with James. Then, you know, obviously the rest of it is that there's a lot of questions. I don't think that's any surprise to anyone, but, you know, listening to him talk about the lines and the situation with depth at linebacker and, you know, the quarterback situation, obviously there's a lot of unknowns going into this spring, and there's a lot of things they have to, you know, install that are maybe not known, obviously, to the public, but maybe not to all the players as well. So there's a lot of questions and a lot of growth coming in the spring practice, and it obviously needs to be a good one for this program. I don't think there's any question about that.
Right. I'd asked her earlier, when I was talking to Rich Scarcella about this, and I said, how much more intriguing is it, even though James Franklin makes the ultimate decision as to what's going on here, is there more added intrigue that a fresh set of eyes and Joe Moorhead's assisting in this decision?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that obviously he's a guy that knows exactly what is needed for his offense. And, of course, James is going to make the final decision and have a whole lot of input. But, you know, this guy has obviously proven at multiple stops that, you know, a certain kind of quarterback and a certain sort of skill set is what's needed to win his offense and to be, you know, successful the way his offense can be. So I think it most certainly helps. And I think that, you know, under sort of under-talked about part of that as well is that, and it's no knock on Ricky Ronnie, but, you know, now Penn State has a fresh set of eyes at tight ends, too, with him moving over there. He obviously, you know, did well as a quarterback's coach, but, you know, that is a position group that I think needs, you know, a little bit of a transformation, and I think it certainly needed some new eyes as well to sort of reach to the potential of the players that it has in that unit. So I think that could be a positive of the whole offseason coaching shuffle as well.
Saquon Barkley, there are questions asked about him and about the running backs as well. Mark Allen, Andre Robinson, I think, was asked about yesterday as well. Hey, what's your thought on when you hear the numbers he's posted, because it's his first winter program, and the bod pod numbers and things like that, about Barkley when you look at him as a pure football player?
I mean, it's obviously, you know, numbers that really strike you. I mean, the bod pod thing, that's all fine and well, but I don't know necessarily to the common person, you know, how much that really matters. But in terms of what he's able to do, of course, it plays a role. It's an ingredient. And, you know, his testing numbers are through the roof. I don't know, you know, necessarily if the fact that he tested really well is a surprise. But sort of some of the areas that he did really well in are, you know, the power clean he did was obviously sort of the big attention getter because of the fact that there was video of it. And obviously a guy that size shouldn't be able to clean as much as he did, as easily as he did. But, it's a situation where this kid had a really good freshman year and everyone knows what he's capable of and how explosive he is. And, you know, you sometimes wonder if a guy comes on the scene and maybe there's not tape on him and maybe that had some role in, you know, what he was able to do and show. But, I mean, the way the kids test it, there's no question that it's all ability. It's not tape. It's not defense. It's not knowing what to do with him. And a guy that, you know, could run for 1,000 yards behind a sometimes, if not often, challenged Penn State offensive line last year, I think is a very big deal. So, you know, really impressed with him. And obviously Penn State has a whole lot of depth at running back. And I think Joe Moorhead's just the guy to sort of figure out how to use all of it. He's coming in at the right time.
Yeah. How much intrigue do you have with the four true freshmen that obviously are trying to cut their teeth in spring practice and just try to figure out what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, if Connor McGovern is as far along as it's made out to be, I mean, this is a kid that you could see playing from day one. I mean, I thought the comparison, when you go back to some of the takeaways between him and Ryan Bates, was incredibly interesting. I mean, Ryan Bates is a guy that Penn State staff really debated about playing, but he probably wasn't quite big enough to get on the field, and obviously they wanted him, you know, his best 4 years to come after a year of bulking up and whatnot. But McGovern seems to be at that point already, and he's only been on campus for 3 months now. So, I mean, there's a whole heck of a lot of potential for that kid. Obviously, you know, he had a very good high school career. It's going to be a little bit of an adjustment. He played at one of the lower levels in Pennsylvania, so sometimes guys almost always need some time to adjust from the lower levels of high school football to the obvious rigor to the Big Ten. But this is really a kid that I think can make an impact. And then you look at the other guys. I think Jake Zembic has a chance to win the quarterback job down the road. I'm not sure if he's quite, you know, close enough to Tommy Stevens and Trace McSorley to really be a factor this year, but he's going to compete, and that's going to help those guys, whether he wins the job or has a chance to win it or not. And then the other two guys, Alex Gellerstedt, years away, yeah. But you talk about the VOD pod. I liked what I saw from him in terms of gaining, I think it was 20 pounds of muscle or something like that when he was a recruit. Everyone knew he was going to need time to develop, but his frame was so intriguing because they thought he could pack weight onto it quickly. Clearly he can. And then Danny Dalton's interesting to me because obviously, as I mentioned before, Penn State's tight ends need to take a step forward this year. And if those guys don't, you know, maybe he's the kind of guy that gets on the field as, you know, as a young guy that it proves to be better than what's here. You know, is that going to happen? Probably not, but it's certainly a possibility. He's a name to watch in this class of 2016 to play. I don't think there's any question about that.
By the way, I refuse to go near the bod pod. In fact, I will publicly state I fear the bod pod. So I think we give a look that it would spit out numbers and go, no, this can't be right. Hey, recruiting wise, obviously, you know, they have some verbals so far. And you're a pretty good touch as to what direction they're going in positionally. What are some of the positions that you see them concentrating and locking in on? Because it's not just the numbers you get, it's the positional balance you get of a football team.
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. And it's sort of been a quiet recruiting time the last couple of weeks. With spring break, the coach has got some time to sort of cool off, I guess, a little bit, if you will, and sort of re-energize. And the week before that, you know, obviously there's been a lot of time spent on preparing for spring practice since you can't go out on the road and recruit. So it's been a little bit quiet. It'll gear back up here with spring practice starting and kids coming to campus for visits. But, you know, I think they're off to a good start. You know, obviously we'll have a better feel for whether it's a good start or not come June and July when we're getting close to the season and whether those numbers are where they were in the last 2 years or not. But, you know, it's the same positions that really we've talked about for the last 2 years. You know, it's linebacker, it's both lines. You know, after not getting a top target at wide receiver, now last year maybe you look in that direction with the possibility of Deshaun Hamilton being gone and Chris Godwin being gone at the end of the season. You know, those guys will be NFL draft eligible. So, you know, it's a, you know, wide receiver, linebacker, the lines, it's the same as it's always been. You know, I'm not sure if you know, the secondary needs to maybe be a little bit more of a focus this year, but, you know, look at some guys there as well. So I think they're closer, and I believe Andy Frank said this, and then I'm paraphrasing back on signing day, but, you know, they're pretty close, not exactly where they want to be, but closer than they were to sort of the scholarship balance that they want and sort of how they want things broken down across the board. And, you know, when we talk about time for the program to get back to where it wants to be and all those sort of things, that's sort of part of it. And maybe the part that people don't really think of all that much is that, you know, you need time to get things where you want them vertically on the depth chart before you can really get all your top guys horizontally on offense and defense. So they're on the right track. I think they're off to a good start in this class of 2017, but obviously the next month, you know, really 2 or 3 months, are going to tell us more about that than what we already know.
Greg, thanks. Appreciate it, as always.
All right, Steve, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Greg Pickle from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. We'll wrap up today's broadcast extravaganza in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Great to have you with us. NCAA tournament does get underway tonight with Fairleigh Dickinson against Florida Gulf Coast, and then it's Wichita State against Vanderbilt tonight. I know South Carolina beat Vanderbilt, you know, personal aside. I mean, over a summer a couple of years ago, the Spikes had a catcher named Jacob Stallings, who this past year was with the Altoona Curve, part of the Pirates organization. Well, Jacob is Kevin Stallings' son. Kevin Stallings made so many trips here into State College to watch his son play, and then he joined me on a couple of broadcasts. And we had, you know, just was great to be around and still text him from time to time. Just from a personal point of view, I'm glad Kevin got in because I know him and I don't know Frank Martin at all at South Carolina. So that was the only one that was complaining about that one. I thought, nah, you know what? I'm going to go with people I consider to be my friends and not go the other way. So yeah, I'll be rooting for Vandy tonight because I'm rooting for Kevin. And, yeah, he's just a really, really good guy. Really good guy. I like him a lot. Respect him a lot. And is a great parent who his son was the focal point, and he just wanted to be there as a dad. That will be coming up tonight at Wichita State. That is the late game. It's the late game.
So the tournament gets underway in earnest tonight. It is interesting. I was mentioning earlier, CBI and Vegas 16, two other tournaments. Not one Power 5 conference team elected to take a bid from either one of those tournaments. In fact, Vegas is only going to be 8 teams this year, not 16. And I know the NIT and the NCAA. The NCAA, by the way, owns and runs the NIT. I know that there's some sort of fear in particular, not from the CBI. They're not all that worked up about the CBI. But about Vegas. Destination place. Everybody in one spot. They're all at Mandalay Bay. It's the way the old NIT used to be run. And they had high hopes as to who they were going to get this year. They've been talking about Penn State, NC State, Northwestern, Kansas State, Colorado State, UCLA, Stanford. These were the schools they were looking at that would be involved in this tournament. And then one by one, they all started saying, we won't participate in postseason play. We won't participate in postseason play. They all started making statements on Sunday that they're not going. Now, Boise State may not be one of the Power 5 conference teams, but Boise State's basketball team, which is good, they were gung-ho about this whole deal. And then all of a sudden, yesterday, they dropped out. The NIT is a great sub-tournament. It speaks for itself. It is not the NCAA. It doesn't pretend to be the NCAA, but it gives you that tournament one-and-done feel. What is interesting about it now is that they've changed it ever since the NCAA avoided a lawsuit. The NIT sued them. And the NIT sued the NCAA. I think they got $45.5 million in the suit, and the NCAA took it over. When they took it over, they decided to give automatic bids to conference champions that didn't make the NCAA tournament. What was that number, Sean? 18 is the number you had? I didn't really go through it. But there are only 14 open spots. Here's the issue. And Bucknell fans are going to disagree with this, and I completely understand why you would. But I'll say it anyway. Everybody is for the little guy or the mid-major guy. Come on, get little guy in. Get Monmouth in. Get mid-major in. Come on, you got to get more Bradleys in there and, you know, more mid-major guy. I mean, the Power 5 dominates everything all the time. Power 5, that's all we do is dominate Power 5, Power 5. More mid-majors, more little guy. Okay. I completely understand where you're coming from. Completely. Now here's the issue. Once you do it, you don't watch. You don't watch. Simple as that. You want to see the Blue Bloods. Where's Duke? Now you'll watch little guy take on Kentucky. If a little guy has a chance to win, you're locked in. This is awesome. And it is. It brings great ratings. But the further little guy goes, the less you are interested. And if little guy faces other little guy, or mid-major faces other mid-major, you definitely aren't interested. Great. Butler's playing VCU in the final. Great. What time's the Duke game on? Okay, great. Duke's on next. Good. Can't wait. Duke and UConn are playing in the other half of the break. Love it. Great. We'll watch. Lowest rated Final Four. Butler, VCU. Florida Gulf Coast, I was there when they beat Georgetown. Whole arena is going insane. But remember, part of that is Georgetown is the foil. It was not Florida Gulf Coast playing against Grand Canyon State. Nobody knew we're going to be going crazy. Nobody would care. But it was Florida Gulf Coast and Georgetown. They took Georgetown down. Place went crazy. I mean, I was sitting there. I was covering the game. And then San Diego State was next, and they beat San Diego State. And I remember I said to Dick Girardi after the game was over with, after Florida Gulf Coast beat Georgetown, I said, that team will beat San Diego State. And they did. But then they got to the Sweet 16, and the ratings for their game was in the toilet. Same thing. You only tolerate little guy when little guy... You're really into little guy and mid-major guy when they have a chance to knock off big guy. You are not into a steady diet of big guy. I mean, you're not into a steady diet of little guy, mid-major guy. You're just not into that diet. TV ratings show it over and over again. And especially if they play someone that's comparable to them in terms of where they are on the, quote, pecking order. If that one of those games comes up, I don't want to watch that. I mean, tonight Fairleigh Dickinson will play Florida Gulf Coast. There'll be some rating, but not much. Then you got Wichita State, Vanderbilt, little more name cachet. Wichita State's been in the Final Four. And Vanderbilt, obviously, has been around the block a few times with Kevin Stallings running the show. Then tomorrow night you got Michigan playing Tulsa, but Michigan is the draw for the whole night. You know, Holy Cross is going to play tomorrow night. Now, some people in our area might watch Holy Cross because they're the Patriot champion. But across the country, there's no fascination with Holy Cross outside of Worcester. There aren't even people in Boston and Providence are going to watch.
Plus, these first four games are on True TV, and if you're a diehard fan, you have to look for the channel.
It's the only time all year I watch 841 on my local cable.
Same number on mine, too.
Sean, I can't tell you a single show that True TV has on at all. The first time will be tonight when they're running promos for their other shows. They'll go, oh, that's what you carry. Really? Fairleigh Dickinson and Florida Gulf Coast belong on True TV.